at WBAI.org. The program you just heard, Labrish, with Haptah Selassie, will be back next week at 2, following the work of the Midnight Ravers. It is 5 o'clock and time for Back of the Book. Stay tuned.
Hello, this is Radio's Uncle Sidney. When I'm out and about, folks comes up to me and says, "You should be ashamed." But when they calms down, they says how much they loves WBAI. That's WBAI New York and WBAI.org. Back in the day, we had commentaries by Malcolm X, Ayn Rand, Abby Hoffman, and William F. Buckley Jr. Imagine them folks in the same room at the same time. Nowadays, we've got Bob Fass, the founder of the feast. Amy Goodman, you know her, we got her. Michio Kaku, the smartest guy in the world. Shows that helps you not to get evicted. Top-of-the-line news and interviews. Insane artists and musicians. All okay, okay. We went nuts for a while back there. But now we're okay. We're like your crackhead cousin that's making good. So we know you're pulling for us. Go, go, run right now to WBAI.org and look around. See where we've gone. You can even subscribe online. Believe me, you'll be glad you did. Stay tuned.
It should be about 5 a.m., and you're listening to all. We're having a heat wave, a tropical heat wave. Radio WBAI New York.
No, I know we're not in Kansas.
goddamn morning. How the hell are you? This is WBAI New York. The program is back of the book. My name is R. Paul Martin. She is Radio's Pickles of the North. Good morning, my dear.
Good morning to you, my dear, and a hearty hello to our dear 19 listeners, wherever they may be.
And we're going to talk about various things here on this program. You can find out a little bit more about all of it by going up to my website at glib.com, glib.com. When you get there, you'll see a blue navigation frame in the left side of your screen. At the top, it will say latest back-of-the-book program links. Click on that, and you will get to the webpage for this morning's radio program. The WBAI website and the archives seem to be working all right as we record this program. This is our 100th pandemic episode of Back of the Book. It's pre-recorded. This program was recorded on Friday for airing on Saturday morning. So if things have happened between then and when you're hearing this program, we won't be referencing them on this program. A recorded program cannot be as up-to-date as a live program, but this is what we have to do in these dangerous times. And our top story of this week. On Twitter, we are holding at 120 followers. Oh, boy, the whole world takes note that we're holding at 120 now. The next meeting of the WBAI local station board will be held on Tuesday, August 2nd, 2022. But it will be an executive session. So you can't hear it. The next regular local station board meeting will be held on Wednesday, August 10th at 7 p.m. on Zoom, even though Zoom compromises privacy and security. According to the Johns Hopkins website, COVID-19 cases in the whole world reached 568,617,163 on Friday, and global deaths reached 6,381,381. In America, the number of cases as of Friday was 90,335,327, and the death toll in America was 1,026,723. So 3,057 people have died of COVID-19 in America since our last program 1 week ago. That's slightly lower than the previous weekly average, but significantly higher than what it had been for a while. This pandemic is not over, even though a lot of people are behaving as if it were. In fact, a lot of people are just not bothering to get vaccinated or wearing masks, and that's not a good idea. Some attribute this to what's being called pandemic burnout. Or maybe it's just that people are lazy and undisciplined. And it's been announced that President Biden has COVID-19 now. Of course, he's double vaccinated and double boosted, so he feels a little crummy, and they're giving him Paxlovid, which, you know, he's the president of the United States. He's going to get good care. Just like when Trump went in. God, they could have just, you know, let him sit there and die, but oh well. Too bad. Anyway, so Biden has it, and it's mild symptoms. And Benny Thompson, the chair of the January 6th committee, has it, so he had to show up at the January 6th committee electronically. And there you go. And again, this is our 100th pandemic episode, so we've done 100 of these programs, of which you could hear 99. You can't hear the 100 because one of them never got aired at all. And that's just life. We put it up on our website someplace. So, yeah, there's that. But, wow, 100 episodes. We have not been able to be in WBAI's premises since March 7th, 2020. And so, oh, my gosh, we are approaching 2 years and 5 months here. And, you know, obviously on August 7th, it'll be our time to say, hey, it's 2 years and 5 months. But 100 pandemic episodes. This is bizarre.
It's bizarre and it's difficult. And as we're recording this 100th pandemic episode, my mother has turned 92 years old. The last time I saw her, she was 89 years old. Oh, so, yeah. I mean, I am glad she's still in this world and with my dad, because so many people have lost loved ones throughout the pandemic, because of the pandemic. But we're all going through deprivations of many kinds, and it's very, very hard for so, so many people throughout the world. I don't like living in interesting times.
Oh, yeah. And, of course, it's also quite hot. We're having a heat wave, and so we're all stripped down here and sweating away as we record. By the time this program airs on Saturday morning, all of those figures we quoted will be higher, of course, and this was all mostly preventable.
So, a couple of weeks ago, dear listeners, Canada had a big electronic outage. One of their providers, Rogers, internet service provider, among many other things, it and Ma Bell do a lot of stuff in Canada. Well, Rogers went out a couple of weeks ago, and it took them a few days to get things fixed. And it was something about, I don't know, data being updated. I'm still not sure what happened. I don't know if they're sure what happened. I don't know if they told everyone what happened, actually. But it's crazy because the big deal that they came up with is if you use our company in any capacity, we give you 5 days of credit. Wow. People couldn't call 911 if they had this as their cell provider. So that doesn't seem like a good compensation to me. Anyway, apparently the Canadian government uses their service for its passport processing. Our niece, one of our beloved nieces who lives in out west in Calgary, has not been able to get her passport. Now, the passport service has been way backed up during the pandemic, and this has made it worse. So she and her dear sweetheart are not going to be able to fly to Las Vegas like they had been dreaming of, but instead are going to have to staycation in Canada, which can be fun, but still, it's not when you have like a special place you really wanted to go to. So, and it turns out my parents did not have that company providing their phone and TV and internet, so I'm very glad about that because they really need to be able to call 911 if they have to. Anyway, this is a problem where you have two big companies. That's not really, it's not a monopoly, but it's pretty damn close. So the government might want to reconsider.
It's called a duopoly.
Ah.
Not a monopoly, but a duopoly. And yeah, they're just as bad as monopolies because the two of them get together and say, we got it all. We got it cornered. We don't have to kill each other. Since we've got the market cornered, we'll just play ball with each other and make a boatload of money. So, duopoly. And, of course, the Russian invasion of Ukraine continues. The Russians have announced that they're going after even more of the territory of Ukraine. They continue to bombard residential neighborhoods. Leftoids are continuing to insert their usual reasons for why Russia is not to blame for the war against Ukraine. And, of course, they claim it's not a war. This is reminiscent of the Communist Party USA supporting Joseph Stalin through all of his horrors. They famously backed the Soviet Union's treaty with the Third Reich that resulted in both the Nazis and the commies invading Poland in 1939. And in 1939, Poland wasn't a very nice place in and of itself, but still, it was a problem and it got invaded. Just as Ukraine isn't some place I would really endorse, but you don't invade it. And, of course, in 1939, the Third Reich and the Soviet Union divided Poland up along the lines the two dictatorships had agreed to in the Hitler-Stalin Pact. Interestingly, the Communist Party was in agreement with the right-wing isolationists of the 30s and 40s in America. These days, Noam Chomsky is pushing some humbug that various leftoids are posting to mailing lists. Chomsky is quoted as saying about this war that, quote, "It's quite interesting that in American discourse, it is almost obligatory to refer to the invasion as the, quote, unprovoked invasion of Ukraine," unquote. Look it up on Google. You will find hundreds of thousands of hits. Of course it was provoked. Otherwise, they wouldn't refer to it all the time as an unprovoked invasion, unquote. I wonder if Professor Chomsky has ever read the novel 1984. For those enamored of a war is peace, peace is war ideology, I suppose there's comfort in being able to make such silly pronouncements.
We are going through a terrible heat wave, as is much of, well, the continent and other continents. The whole damn world is either on fire or drowning. However, if you're at home right now and you don't have air conditioning or it's very warm, one way I have of keeping myself sane during a heat wave is to think about cool things. Read winter stories, look at videos online that are full of snow and ice. And one thing that came to mind was a passage from A Tree Grows in Brooklyn. A Tree Grows in Brooklyn, of course, considered a classic in many circles by Betty Smith. And it's about a family, an impoverished family who live in Williamsburg at the turn of the last century. So the part I'm going to read to you, the excerpt, takes place about 1910, I believe, in the book. And it's a family of Irish Americans, basically. The daughter, Francie, the son, Neely, and the mother and father. The mother scrubs floors for a living. The dad is a singing waiter when he's not off on a binge. And usually he's off on a binge. He's a loving guy, but he's a complete, you know, he just can't take care of his family the way that he should. So this is what happens. I think this may be based on what actually happened at the time in Ms. Smith's life, because part of this is autobiographical, even though it's a novel. What happens on Christmas Eve in Williamsburg at the tree lot? Spruce trees began coming into the neighborhood the week before Christmas. Their branches were corded to hold back the glory of their spreading and probably to make shipping easier. Vendors rented space on the curb before a store and stretched a rope from pole to pole and leaned the trees against it. All day they walked up and down this one-sided avenue of aromatic leaning trees, blowing on stiff, ungloved fingers and looking with bleak hope at those people who paused. A few ordered a tree set aside for the day. Others stopped to price, inspect, and conjecture. But most came just to touch the boughs and surreptitiously pinch a fingerful of spruce needles together to release the fragrance. And the air was cold and still, and full of the pine smell and the smell of tangerines, which appeared in the stores only at Christmas time, and the mean street was truly wonderful for a little while. There was a cruel custom in the neighborhood, It was about the trees still unsold when midnight of Christmas Eve approached. There was a saying that if you waited until then, you wouldn't have to buy a tree. That they'd chuck 'em at you. This was literally true. At midnight on the eve of our dear Savior's birth, the kids gathered where there were unsold trees. The man threw each tree in turn, starting with the biggest. Kids volunteered to stand up against the throwing. If a boy didn't fall down under the impact, the tree was his. If he fell, he forfeited his chance at winning a tree. Only the roughest boys and some of the young men elected to be hit by the big trees. The others waited shrewdly until a tree came up that they could stand against. The littlest kids waited for the tiny, foot-high trees and shrieked in delight when they won one. On the Christmas Eve, when Francie was 10 and Neely 9, Mama consented to let them go down and have their first try for a tree. Francie had picked out her tree earlier in the day. She had stood near it all afternoon and evening praying that no one would buy it. To her joy, it was still there at midnight. It was the biggest tree in the neighborhood, and its price was so high that no one could afford to buy it. It was 10 feet high. Its branches were bound with new white ropes, and it came to a sure, pure point at the top. The man took this tree out first. Before Francie could speak up, a neighborhood bully, a boy of 18 known as Punky Perkins, stepped forward and ordered the man to chuck the tree at him. The man hated the way Punky was so confident. He looked around and asked, "Anyone else want to take a chance on it?" Francie stepped forward. "Me, mister." A spurt of derisive laughter came from the tree man. The kids snickered. A few adults who had gathered to watch the fun guffawed. "Ah, go on, you're too little," the tree man objected. "Me and my brother, we're not too little together." She pulled Neely forward. The man looked at them, a thin girl of 10 with starveling hollows in her cheek, but with the chin still baby round. He looked at the little boy with his fair hair and round blue eyes. Neely Nolan, all innocence and trust. "Two ain't fair," yelped Punky. "Shut your lousy trap," advised the man who held all the power in that hour. "These here kids got nerve. Stand back, the rest of yous. These kids is going to have a show at this tree." The others made a wavering line. Francie and Neely stood at one end of it, and the big man with the big tree at the other. It was a human funnel with Francie and her brother making the small end of it. The man flexed his great arms to throw the great tree. He noticed how tiny the children looked at the end of the short lane. For the split part of a moment, the tree thrower went through a kind of Gethsemane. "Oh, Jesus Christ," his soul agonized. "Why don't I just give him the tree, say Merry Christmas, and let him go? What's the tree to me? I can't sell it no more this year, and it won't keep till next year." The kids watched him solemnly as he stood there in his moment of thought. "But then," he rationalized, "if I did that, all the others would expect to get them handed to them. And next year, nobody at all would buy a tree off of me. They'd all want to get them handed to them on a silver plate. I ain't a big enough man to give this tree away for nothing. No, I ain't big enough. I ain't big enough to do a thing like that. I got to think of myself and my own kids." He finally came to his conclusion. "Oh, what the hell? Them two kids got to live in this world. They got to get used to it. They got to learn to give and to take punishment. And by Jesus, it ain't give but take, take, take all the time in this goddamn world." As he threw the tree with all his strength, his heart wailed out, "It's a goddamn rotten, lousy world." Francie saw the tree leave his hands. There was a split bit of being when time and space had no meaning. The whole world stood still as something dark and monstrous came through the air. The tree came towards her, blotting out all memory of her ever having lived. There was nothing, nothing but pungent darkness and something that grew and grew as it rushed at her. She staggered as the tree hit them. Neely went to his knees, but she pulled him up fiercely before he could go down. There was a mighty swishing sound as the trees settled. Everything was dark, green, and prickly. Then she felt a sharp pain at the side of her head where the trunk of the tree had hit her. She felt Neely trembling. When some of the older boys pulled the tree away, they found Francie and her brother standing upright, hand in hand. Blood was coming from scratches on Neely's face. He looked more like a baby than ever, with his bewildered blue eyes and the fairness of his skin made more noticeable because of the clear red blood. But they were smiling. Had they not won the biggest tree in the neighborhood? Some of the boys hollered, "Hooray!" A few adults clapped. The tree man eulogized them by screaming, "And now, get the hell out of here with your tree, you lousy bastards!" And that's an excerpt from A Tree Goes in Brooklyn with the lovely cold Christmas Eve story.
Well, I hope that's cooled everyone down in this heat wave. And right about now, I think it's time for us to do a station break. This is WBAI New York, 99.5 FM, broadcasting from a transmitter and antenna atop 4 Times Square, going through a new studio somewhere in downtown Brooklyn and originating in our living room somewhere else in Brooklyn. The program is back of the book. My name is R. Paul Martin. She is Radio's Pickles of the North, and you can find out more by going up to my website at glib.com, glib.com. You can also go to the official website of this radio station at wbai.org. And now, it's mandatory pitch time. Yes, this is WBAI New York, and we are listener-sponsored non-commercial radio. And what we're doing is we're asking you to be one of our listener sponsors. Yes, you do that by calling 1-212-209-2950 and telling the people who pick up at the call center that you want to become a BAI buddy in the name of Back of the Book. And you also get to tell them a BAI buddy is our sustaining membership, and you can tell them how much you would like to donate on a monthly basis and when you would like your credit card or debit card billed for this. Or you can do a one-time donation. Mostly at this time, we're being asked to solicit one-time donations for the Tower Fund. The Tower Fund is about the tower, our transmitter and antenna. We share the antenna at 4 Times Square. And that's where you're hearing us from. If we don't pay the rent there, we end up not on the air anymore. So we're asking you to go to your phone, dial 1-212-209-2950 and say you want to donate to the WBAI Tower Fund in the name of Back of the Book. Make sure they get Back of the Book in there. And, you know, then so you tell them how much you want to donate. It is one lump sum and you do it. If you donate $25 or more, you become a member of WBAI and of Pacifica. So when the elections come up, you get to vote. And if anything else comes up, you get to vote. Who knows what's going to come up? These are interesting times. Anyway, 1-212-209-2950. Please give us a call at that number right about now and it will help. And we want to thank Tony. We want to thank Tony for donating.
Hi, Tony.
Yes, Tony donated last week when we were pitching. So thank you, Tony. Please join Tony and call 1-212-209-2950 and say you want to make a donation to the WBAI Tower Fund. Oh, we need folks to do that right about now. Yes, 1-212-209-2950 is the number we need you to call. You know, we do different things on here. This isn't really a fits in some easy category type of radio program. It has been, for many years, a freeform live radio program. It can't be live anymore. As I said before, we haven't been to the studio since March 7th, and we have done 100 of these programs from home, recording them, because we can't go into BAI anymore and do it live. But we do what we can. So we're asking you to help support the kind of unusual radio we do by calling 1-212-209-2950. Management thinks we have no listeners because the Nielsen ratings seem to show we have no listeners, although I've seen some in the past that have shown we have a few listeners. 1-212-209-2950, and we need to show them that we do have listeners and listeners who will donate. So again, we need you to call up 1-212-209-2950 and say you want to contribute to the WBAI Tower Fund. And again, whatever you can donate will be good. $25 or more makes you a member of WBAI and Pacifica. Now, we do all sorts of things here. We talk about politics, because that's all happening all over the place. We talk about the pandemic on every one of these programs. And we also do science things besides the pandemic. Last time, we had a lot of space things. We talked about the Next Generation Space Telescope, which is named after a homophobe, and we won't mention his name if we could get away with it. And we also talked about the Voyager space probes, which are now in, theoretically, intergalactic space, and they're zooming along. We talked about that extensively because the space telescope, the new space telescope, is the latest thing, and those two space probes, Voyager 1 and Voyager 2, have been plying the spaceways for, what is this, 45 years? Oh, man, these things have been out there. And they're still going. They're still going. And we talked about that and read from some stuff from people who actually worked on them. And so we do things like that. You don't hear that anyplace else. So we talk about all sorts of science issues and politics and gay issues and whatever the hell else. 1-212-209-2950. That's the number we're asking you to call so that we can all survive here. That's 1-212-209-2950. And if we fall behind too much on paying four times square the rent, they turn us off. And it isn't hard. All they have to do is flip a switch. That's it. It's done. So we got to pay them. 1-212-209-2950. And if we can't raise any money, everything is off the air. And if Back of the Book doesn't raise any money, you know, management's going to say again, hey, look, you don't have any listeners. We want to put something on in that time slot that will get a listenership, an audience. And they will be able to maybe get some of those folks to support the station financially, because that's what this is about right now. We're trying to get you to support the station financially. The way you do that is to call 1-212-209-2950 and say you want to make a donation to the WBAI Tower Fund. And you want to make that donation in the name of Back of the Book, which is this radio program. So please, if you can do it at all, please get up, go to your phone, make a donation to the Tower Fund, 1-212-209-2950, and tell management that we do have listeners. Tony has told management we do have listeners. You can join Tony, who donated last week, and say, yes, Back of the Book has listeners, and listeners who care enough to donate to the Tower Fund to keep it all going on the air. 1-212-209-2950. That's the number we need for you to call. We need you to call the number now. Oh boy, it would be really good if people could call that number now. Oh, we're going to make some sound effect noise. Please, please call that number, 1-212-209-2950, and say you want to join Tony and be a contributor to Back of the Book, and you want to help keep Back of the Book on WBAI and keep WBAI on the air. Yeah, WBAI falls behind in paying the tower rent, and this happens if we fall, I think it's 3 months behind on the tower rent, they throw the switch. because they're not going to do the thing that the Empire State Building used to do, which is, well, we'll fine you some more money, and then we never catch up, and we always owe them money. And so they're not going to do that. They're not going to play that game. They're going to say, you don't pay, we turn the switch, and you're off the air, period. So we need you to call 1-212-209-2950 and say you want to become a member of WBAI and you want to contribute some amount of money to help pay the tower fund. 1-212-209-2950. Please give us a call at that number now. We'd really appreciate it if you would call. And if you call, write to me, rpm at glib.com. That's rpm at sign glib.com, and say, hey, I contributed to the tower fund there, and I'm gonna hope that this helps to keep you on the air. So if you do that, if you do call 1-212-209-2950 and contribute, thanks a lot. So Pickles of the North was talking about the Canadian problem with one of the big ISPs up there, part of the duopoly. And there are other online things that are happening. And unfortunately, things online are being used for surveillance of us all. It's not like they're watching John Dillinger only all the time. Of course, he's dead. It's easy to watch. But they're watching all of us. And in Shanghai, there's data for sale. If you want some Shanghai data, you can buy it. An unidentified person, it's being reported, or maybe a group, they don't know, is offering what is described as data on a billion citizens of the so-called People's Republic of China. The price is only $200,000. That sounds pretty easy to me. The New York Times says that from the sample that they've seen, the information is authentic. So it's a billion people in China, and you're going to get data on them. The police in the People's Republic of China are very up to date on collecting information. They have the latest stuff, and they are motivated. And the way that dictatorship works is you grab all the information you can. And they're good at grabbing all the information. But it's not that centralized, and a lot of different little commissars and other Communist Party members who manage to, blow somebody and get into a certain position, they have a position of collecting the data, but they have no idea about how to secure the data. So it's easy for these criminals to go in and grab it. So, yeah, I bet you that the actual dictatorship of the so-called People's Republic of China doesn't even really give a rat's zinger about this. In further surveillance state news, San Francisco Mayor London Breed is backing a proposal that would authorize the police department to use non-city-owned security cameras and camera networks to live monitor, quote, significant events with public safety concerns, unquote, and ongoing felony or misdemeanor violations. Currently, the police in San Francisco can only request historical footage from private cameras related to specific times and locations rather than blanket monitoring. This new law they want to have there would allow the police to just grab that video and audio information, and they could also just use private surveillance devices to monitor things in real time. This relates not just to companies that have cameras aimed at their doors and things like that, but also to individual people's Ring cameras that are aimed out at the street. You know, a lot of people have these cameras to see who's coming up to ring the bell. And they face the street, and they're on all the time, and they are always recording video, sometimes video and audio. And so the police want to really use everybody's doorbells, basically. Every doorbell is watching you. And in some places, an entire block of people will have these. So They've got that block watched 24/7. Some people think that's a great idea. I don't think that's a great idea. Speaking, by the way, of Amazon's surveillance camera doorbell company, Ring, they've already provided video to law enforcement without a warrant and also without the consent of the doorbell owners. They've done this 11 times this year alone. This sneaky peeking was revealed in a letter from the company that was made public recently by U.S. Senator Edward Markey of Massachusetts. It was in response to questions Senator Markey had asked regarding the company's surveillance policies in June. So this is a very serious thing. I've always said, geez, this is kind of not a good idea, these cameras watching everything. And then, of course, you have people with stuff in their homes. The same technology that watches the street is in the home. Are the police going to stop at the street? They can certainly tap into this. Plus, a lot of people have those devices from a couple of different companies where you call the device's name and say, turn on the lights, turn off the lights, turn on a TV, change to this channel, or whatever the hell you please. And these things are, of course, because they have to have a voice command, they're monitoring you 24/7. We know that in some cases, people have been listening to those. We also know that those things are recorded. So there's this huge trove of data. Now, the National Security Agency has these gigantic campuses out west where they've dug in and built gigantic buildings that go down into the earth, many floors and super sub-basements, and they store data in those. And we know that every phone call made in America is in there. And so are they also maybe, and also they're if the police can get these Ring camera things, so is the National Security Agency. Do they also get all of your talking to your various little Amazon and other companies' devices that make it oh so convenient to just say, turn on the TV or turn on the dishwasher, turn on the air conditioning. I wish we had air conditioning right now. Oh, God, it's so hot in here. Anyway, we have this going on, and this is terrible. This is, I've said before, this will happen, and the government will probably not have to impose it because people will demand it. People will be a part of it. People will pay for doing it to themselves, and they are. Now, it's not as far as it's going to go yet, but I think it's going to go completely. And just as in the so-called People's Republic of China, they can just scoop up information on a billion people, we're going to be doing that on hundreds of millions of Americans very soon. A good chunk of people are already as compromised as that, but it's going to get worse. And there's some various news about LGBT plus infinity issues here. That awful person, Texas Republican Senator Ted Cruz, has been expressing his homophobia. He said that the argument for overturning the case Obergefell v. Hodges, which allowed same-gender marriage in the United States, was something he disagreed with. And he said that, quote, Obergefell, like Roe v. Wade, ignored two centuries of our nation's history. Marriage was always an issue that was left to the states. We saw states before Obergefell. Some states were moving to allow gay marriage. Other states were moving to allow civil partnerships. There were different standards that the states were adopting, unquote. Yeah, I'll note also some states had anti-miscegenation laws, too, so that people of different perceived races, there's only one race in the human race, and that's the human race. But, you know, race is perceived as existing, and a lot of people get very hung up on that. And these miscegenation laws, they outlawed that. You could go to prison for marrying somebody whom somebody says, oh, that person's not of the same race as you, so you can't marry them. Yeah, it's all about racial purity. There are all sorts of idiots running around hollering about racial purity. And, so this is what he was saying. So he's a homophobe. We know that. Meanwhile, this past week, the House has passed the Respect for Marriage Act by a vote of 267 to 157 with support from 47 Republicans. Of course, now it has to go to the Senate. But, hey, you know, is it possible they could maybe get some Republican senators to sign on to this and prevent it from being filibustered and passed? That might be a very good thing. Now, if it's passed, I'm not sure if, you know, the Supreme Court could just say, no, you can't pass that anyway. I'm not sure what the Supreme Court's power is in such a case, but it would certainly be something harder for them to knock out than just another Supreme Court case, as Obergefell is right now. And of course, Clarence Thomas says we're going after that. Yeah, that misogynist himself.
At this point, I should say that this is WBAI New York. The program is Back of the Book. He is R. Paul Martin, and I am Radio's Pickles of the North.
And the January 6th committee hearings are over for this part of the summer. They're not going to do any more this month or next month. September, see you in September. Anyway, I could make a whole song of that, I suppose, but I think people will turn off their radios if I do. Anyway, we're no longer hearing about people in the Secret Service, by the way, saying that they were prepared to deny under oath Cassidy Hutchinson's account of an altercation with Trump attacking Secret Service agents in the limo on January 6th. They're not talking about that anymore. Nobody seems to be stepping up to take an oath and say that. Now the Secret Service news is about their deleted text messages from January 6th, after the Department of Homeland Security and National Archives had asked that all records be preserved. I still wonder if Pence's concern about being driven away from the Capitol against his will on January 6th was based on his having gotten wind of some elements of the Secret Service being part of the plot to keep Trump on as president after he'd lost the 2020 election. I still think that's a possibility. Anyway, this week, the January 6th committee certainly did establish that Trump did not try to stop the attack on the Capitol and the legislators in it, while he watched it all on Fox News for more than 3 hours. Some people are saying that the January 6th committee's work is not really relevant, that everything they're talking about is in the past, and that we should all just move on. Besides the fact that allowing an insurrection to go undocumented, if not unpunished, just makes insurrectionist behavior the norm, there's also this. Private citizen Donald J. Trump just the other day called Wisconsin Assembly Speaker Robin Voss to lobby him to get a law passed in Wisconsin that would overturn Trump's 2020 loss in Wisconsin to President Biden. What apparently triggered this bizarre phone call was that on July 8th, the Wisconsin Supreme Court ruled that the use of most drop boxes for voters returning absentee ballots was prohibited. The very next day, Donnie Trump, good old Bonespur, called Assembly Speaker Voss and argued that since drop boxes were used during the 2020 election, that Wisconsin should be able to invalidate the results of the 2020 election in that state. Oh, He pushed Mr. Voss to support a resolution that would retract the state's 10 electoral votes cast for Joe Biden. This not only shows Trump's ignorance regarding how governments work, but it also shows that he will cheat however he can to get back into the White House. There's no mechanism in Wisconsin's law that would allow for the state's electoral votes to be rescinded. And of course, the United States Constitution doesn't allow for a state's presidential election to be overturned after Congress has accepted the results, which was indeed done on January 6th, 2021. Yes, no takesies backsies on presidential elections. Sorry, Bonespur. It's being reported that Assembly Speaker Voss has repeatedly told Trump and his allies that decertifying the former president's loss would violate Wisconsin's constitution. Voss has told a Wisconsin TV station that Trump, quote, has a different opinion, unquote. Meanwhile, a prosecutor in Georgia is gathering evidence into whether Trump violated the law in his attempt to overturn the election results in that state. It's also being reported that some of Trump's supporters and advisors are concerned about potential legal consequences from the testimony revealed by the House committee investigating Trump's January 6th attack in the Capitol. Yeah, that January 6th committee is quite relevant and necessary. Bannon's found guilty. Just before we began to record this program, Steve Bannon, well-known bad guy and Trump supporter and advisor, was convicted of contempt charges for defying a congressional subpoena from the House committee investigating the January 6th insurrection at the U.S. Capitol. One count he was convicted on was refusing to appear for a deposition, and the other was for refusing to provide documents in response to the committee's subpoena. The jury of 8 men and 4 women deliberated just under 3 hours. Bannon is scheduled to be sentenced on October 21st, when he could get sentenced for up to 2 years in federal prison on those counts. The minimum he can get is 60 days in jail. Of course, this is all going to be appealed. I wonder if he'll ever serve a day. He'll certainly work to get Trump elected in 2024 now. He'll hope for an actual pardon this time. That's been it for Back of the Book for this week. We'll be back next week. Coming up next is
Arts Express with Prairie Miller.
Okay, take care of yourselves. Get as cooled down as you can. You know, if you can get air conditioning, do that. Drink plenty of cold liquids. And above all, remember what that sweating all over the place Dormouse said.
we're doing. Your independent, locally controlled alternative media is needed now just as much as ever. The AI which counters hate, bigotry, racism, sexism, climate deniers, oppression, militarism, and greed, and works for peace and justice, giving voice to the voiceless, to workers, and those outside the mainstream. WBAI is needed just as much as ever. In our 62nd year, because of your support, WBAI is now trucking into phase two of our tower drive. It's a push to continue to raise $250,000 to pay the rent on the room which houses WBAI's transmitter at Four Times Square, which costs a bit over $17,000 a month. Back in January, we raised $80,000, and now we keep on trucking to push to the $250,000 goal, funds needed to ensure WBAI's future through 2022. Please call 212-209-2950 and say you want to contribute to WBAI's Tower Fund, or go to towerfund.wbai.org and contribute whatever you can.
This radio hasn't been working very well the past few days.
Peter, where do you live?
I'm glad you asked me.
It's a secret place. Please tell me.
All right, I tell you. I wonder whatever became of me.
All Mixed Up with Peter Beauchamp.
When?
Saturday afternoon here on WBAI.
That should be time for our favorite program. Yes, just about time.
What would you do if I went off the air?
We kill ourselves!
Hello, I'm David Rothenberg. I joined up with WBAI not long after Marconi discovered the wireless. If you tune in on any Saturday, that's the name of my program, you'll hear some good music, commentary covering politics, theater, movies, books, and a word or two about the criminal justice system. Actually, it's whatever's on my mind. And there's usually a guest or two to liven things up. Good start for the weekend, so I've been told. Saturday mornings from 8 to 10 a.m. Oh, and I often have tickets for Broadway and off-Broadway shows. You can get to see a play and support listener-sponsored BAI at the same time. I'm looking forward to your stopping by. I can hear you listening already.
Oh, baby, let's have a party.
Let's have a party.
Let's all begin.
I believe that we have got to mobilize a larger movement to reclaim the democracy.
Radio broadcaster Bob Law.
Some of y'all have underestimated the value and the appeal of white supremacy. And you have no idea how strong white privilege and white supremacy is.
Tune in to From the Streets with Bob Law, which gives voice to a wide range of black and progressive political and cultural perspectives. That's 11 to noon Saturdays here over listener-sponsored WBAI New York.
He's cool. He's exciting.
This dude is bad.
He's sexy. Okay, maybe not. He's a bad mother.
Shut your mouth.
He's Tony Ryan. On WBAI New York 99.5 FM. He's got both.
Frank Hibbs with the sound of the trumpet.
Can you dig it?
Yeah, I can dig it, yeah.
He's got classic soul. He's okay. I can't think of anything else.
I'm Tony Ryan. Tune in Saturday nights, 10 p.m. to 1 a.m.
Soul Central Station with Tony Ryan.
99.5 WBAI.